There were days when Roy could feel the strength draining from his bones, weakening him so he could hardly lift Wonder Boy. He was unwilling to move then for fear he would fall over on his puss and have to crawl away on all fours. Nobody noticed he did not bat when he felt this way except Pop. And Bump, seeing how white his face was, squirted contemptuous tobacco juice in the dust. Then when Roy's strength ebbed back, he would once again go into the batter's cage and do all sorts of marvelous things that made them watch and wonder. He watched them, and he had to laugh. They were a nutty bunch to begin with, but when they were losing, they were impossible. Not much different from the fans in the patched and peeling stands, the place often resembled a zoo full of oddballs. Many of them came just to get a laugh out of the bonehead plays. Some, when the boys were losing, cursed and jeered, showering them, whenever they came close enough, with rotten cabbages, tomatoes, and occasionally an eggplant. Surprisingly, however, a few players were chosen for affection and even admiration by their fans. Fans like Otto P. Zipp, the dwarf, whose self-chosen mission was to rout the critics of Bump Bailey, most of whom razzed the big boy for short-legging on the other fielders. The dwarf honked a loud horn at the end of a 2-foot walking stick, and it sounded as if a flock of geese had been let loose. Zipp was present at every home game, sitting at the rail in short left field, and Bump made it his business, as he trotted out to his position at the start of the game, to greet him with a loud kiss on the forehead, leaving Otto in a state of dreamy bliss. Roy got to know them all except one, Memo Paris, Pop's red-headed niece, who sat in the wives' box behind third base. He could, if she would let him, find her with his eyes shut, with his hands alone, as he had in the dark. Always in the act of love, she lived in his mind, the only way he knew her, because she would not otherwise suffer his approach. He was to blame. She had wept one bitter midnight, so she hated his putrid guts, whenever he got up from his seat in the hotel lobby as she stepped out of the elevator to say how sorry he was for beginning at the wrong end. She tugged at her summer fur piece and breezed by him in green-eyed scorn, withering in the process Bump at the cigar stand, who had laughed aloud at Roy's rout. "A honey bunch," he had explained. "It was out of the pity of my heart that I took that schmo into my room, because they didn't have one for him, and I was intending to pass the night at the apartment of my cousin from Mobile. How'd I know you'd go in there when you said you weren't speaking to me?" Memo punished him with silence, punishing herself, and he knew it, because she still came every day to see him play. Roy everlastingly fried Bump Bailey in the deep fat of abomination. On the 21st of June, the Knights began a series with the second-place Phils. Instead of falling into a swoon, the team played its best ball in weeks. The Phils couldn't score till the top of the eighth, when with two outs, Schultz weakened, walking one man and handing the next a good enough throw to hit for a sharp single, so that there were now men on first and third. Up came Rogers, the Phils slugger, and hit a fast curve for what looked like no more than a long fly ball, a routine catch to left center. Bump was nearer to the ball than Flores, but he was feeling horny in the sun and casting about in his mind for who to invite to his bed tonight. He still had time to get under it, but then saw Flores going for it like a galloping horse, so he decided to let him have it. At the last minute, he tried to take it away from the Mex, risking a head-on collision, but the wind whipped the ball closer to the wall than he had bargained for, so Bump fell back. The ball fell between them, good for a double and scoring two of the Phils. Pop tore at what was left of his gray hair. When Bump returned to the dugout, Pop cursed him from the cradle to the grave, and for once, Bump had no sassy answers. The rain washed out the Phils series, but the Knights were starting another with the seven-place Redbirds. In batting practice, Roy looked tremendous, but so did Bump. For the first time in a long while, Roy went out to left field to limber up. Bump was out there, too, and Earl swatted fungos to both. As they were changing into clean uniforms before the start of the game, Bump warned Roy in front of everybody, "Just stay out of my way, Busher, or you'll get your head bashed." Roy squirted spit on the floor. Bump was a bang-up fielder that day. He accepted eight chances, twice chasing into center field to take them from Flores. Still not satisfied, he pounded like a bull after his ninth try, a smoking ball that sailed up high, headed for the wall. As Bump ran for it, he could feel fear leaking through his stomach. He ran harder, and with a magnificent twisting jump, he trapped the ball in his iron fingers. Yet the wall continued to advance, and though the red-headed lady of his choice was on her feet, shrieking, Bump bumped it with a skull-breaking bang, and the wall embraced his broken body.